When you have a loved one with dementia, the practical and emotional demands can be overwhelming. What if you could be grounded and confident, embracing the journey, even when a loved one has dementia? This is Catherine Hammond, and together with my co-host Kent Matthews, let's explore how to do that here on A Thriving Life.
This is Kent Matthews with A Thriving Life, and today for our podcast, we are on the topic of caregiving for someone with dementia, and we're going to be looking at the whole issue of driving, and that's a really deep, complex topic in terms of how the driving impacts the dementia and how to deal with that. And our guest today for our podcast is Terry Cassidy. Terry has her doctorate in occupational therapy and is a certified driver rehabilitation specialist, or CDRS. She owns and operates Health Promotion Partners, which provides driver rehabilitation services through the Fitness to Drive program. And in addition, she is the program director for the Engage Mobility Initiative and is a CarFit instructor. So welcome, Terry. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kent. I'm glad to be here.
So with Fitness to Drive, tell me a little bit about what you do with that and what does that entail and how does it benefit people who with dementia and that whole issue of driving?
Sure. So what I do is driver evaluations. And a lot of times that is all done in one session. So we would have somebody come in for about a 3-hour time period, and we would go through the skills related to driving. So it can look a little different depending on what's going on with that individual, but we're going to look at strength, vision, range of motion, also looking particularly with somebody with dementia, looking at memory, cognition. You know, hopefully I have some more information about their dementia before they come in, but oftentimes I don't. Really in the context of executive functioning, judgment, reaction time, all of those things we're looking at in the clinical setting. And then we go out in our adapted vehicle that has a brake on the passenger side and see how whatever's going on, kind of what we're seeing clinically, how that affects driving skills.
Okay. So when people have dementia, how does that interfere with driving ability? Because some people may not even think that I've got memory loss, so they may not even be aware of that memory loss has an impact on their driving skills. So from what you've seen as a professional, how does dementia impact driving skills?
Sure. Now, good question. And I do see a lot of individuals who have dementia who have that exact question that you're asking.
Okay.
The thing is that dementia affects the brain, and the brain is controlling so much of what we do. So a lot of it, we immediately think of memory, and there certainly is a piece of memory that's important for driving. But also, what tends to happen is that reaction times are slower, processing speeds are slower, and judgment is impaired. And so all of these pertain in the driving task as well. And it might be helpful if I describe how I kind of think about the driving task.
Okay.
There's three different levels, and the basic level is the operational level of driving. And that is being able to make a right-hand turn, make a left-hand turn, you know, steer, the basics of operating a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about driving, that's what people often think of, especially when they're coming in for an assessment. Sure, I can drive my car down the street. No problem. Then there's the tactical level of driving, and that is making those decisions in the moment. So we're driving, the light's turning yellow, do I have time to stop or not? Someone's pulling out in front of me, or it's a four-way stop. You know, these in-the-moment decisions that are more complex than just operating gas and brake.
Right.
And then the third level is strategic level. And that level is really planning the whole driving task, deciding, is it a good day for me to drive? Is the weather conducive to me driving right now? I'm going to this place. What's the best way to get there? And I have to also go pick up the dog. How do I make those decisions about where to go and how to get there? Often, the strategic level is where we first see deficits, but it's the last place people see it in themselves. So oftentimes when someone's coming in for an evaluation, they're thinking, but I can operate my vehicle just fine.
Right.
And honestly, from the family's perspective, that's the concern, mm-hmm. is yes, they can operate the vehicle right. at this point,
right.
and that's what makes me nervous
right.
if those tactical and strategic levels are not intact.
So that the whole classic of being able to drive, getting into the, because they could do the driving part, but the tactical and especially the strategic, so they get in the car and then they find themselves totally lost with no clue as to how to get back, kind of a thing, because they've lost that strategic ability.
Yeah, and it's an interesting piece because there's so much of driving that is so ingrained. You know, a lot of people that I've seen have been driving for 60, 70 years.
Right.
And so that piece of getting in, and even like I was saying, the four-way stop, that part is pretty ingrained. And that's where I do see the memory deficits come into play. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been in the vehicle with somebody who was, we had a plan. He mm-hmm. was driving me from his house to where he plays tennis. Mm-hmm. But we just kept driving past the tennis place and kept driving. And eventually I just asked him, so where are we headed? Oh, I thought you wanted to see the mountains. And, you know, so it was like the real, you hear these stories, but to actually be the passenger there saying, you know, he just saw the next thing.
Right.
And it made sense to him. And he was driving safely.
Right.
But not with that awareness of what the intent was and where we were supposed to go. And mm-hmm. so that's a tricky piece to navigate. And I think for a lot of families, that's tricky because you can't say, tomorrow you're going to get into an accident. But there's concerns and there's risks associated with that disorientation and that getting lost.
So what kind of frustrations do you hear from family members when they call and they say, I want to bring dad or mom in, you know, for an evaluation? What are the concerns, frustrations you're hearing as you talk to them?
Well, just in terms of the reasons that they're coming in is always something I want to hear about. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times the concerns are maybe the neighbor has told the adult child, well, she went to the doctor and it took her 2 hours to get home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have a friend who was a passenger when they made an unsafe turn. You know, mm-hmm. so a lot of times the families are hearing things, sometimes secondhand, mm-hmm. About specific driving habits or practices.
Right.
And a lot of times the family is really concerned for safety of their loved one and of somebody else. Mm-hmm. And how do we navigate this area without completely destroying our family dynamics and mm-hmm. trust and all of these things that are so important to caregiving?
Okay. For me, and I think this is true for a lot of people, like driving, like you had said, is such an ingrained habit because we've been doing it since like high school. For most of us, boomers, kind of different from what I'm hearing about millennials, but for the boomers and Gen Xers, we've been driving. It's so ingrained in us. Does that present a problem when talking with the person you've just evaluated and you know they have some cognitive issues, some memory loss? Does that present a challenge in terms of trying to communicate the reality of the situation?
Yeah, it's a complex question that you ask there because there's so much tied in with driving. So mm-hmm. absolutely. And I think as a practitioner, acknowledging that and even acknowledging that with the client, that for a lot of people, like you said, especially in these generations, driving holds so much meaning and holds so much value beyond a means to get from here to there.
Correct.
So trying to acknowledge that and value that mm-hmm. Is a really important piece. Mm-hmm. I think, regardless of dementia, I think that any adult who is having age-related changes and is having to give up their driving, it's a really difficult decision to make. It's a really difficult piece because it's hard to not, I almost want to say, it's hard to not take it personally.
Yes.
I find that if there's a physical reason why someone has to give up driving, it's easier. I want to say it's easier on the ego. So if somebody has a vision loss and the eye doctor tells them it's not safe for you to be driving, you don't meet the state recommendations, all of these things, it's hard. It's a really difficult change,
right.
But it's a little easier to internalize that.
Right.
And that's where we get to somebody with a cognitive disability, somebody with a dementia or some sort of impairment in their thinking, to where it's not physical, it's not something that's so clear-cut that it's really hard to even accept that there's a need to stop driving. And I think, so that's the biggest challenge, I think, for family members, for professionals, is that insight is really a huge piece of making safe decisions about yourself. And this isn't just for driving, but saying, yes, I'm doing a good job at this activity, I should keep doing it. That's one of those things that generally is not there with dementia, that insight, that ability to reason about yourself.
Right.
And so then those discussions about driving are just not absorbed because they don't really think that, they don't believe what people are telling them a lot of times about the driving.
Yeah.
In that vein, I will say it is beneficial in my case for people to come and see somebody like me to help facilitate this driving discussion. So I think it's one thing for a family member to say, Dad, we're really concerned about your driving. We think it's time to stop. And that may go well, and it may not, as we're kind of alluding to. I think sometimes it is beneficial to have that be, you know what? Let's take this to a third party. Let's have you go to an objective clinician who's going to look at what's going on, look at your driving, and help make a decision. So it kind of takes some of the weight off of that family member.
Right.
And depending on the adult, sometimes that they are better able to hear it from somebody else, even if their child has told them the exact same thing.
Right.
It's just, there's those pieces there.
So you're very comfortable being the heavy or the bad guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I don't like to be the bad guy, but honestly, I don't see it in that way. So yes, I will explain it to families as I would much rather have me be the bad guy, have this anger, if there's anger directed my way, than your way.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I go home happy that I'm helping families through these transitions.
Is there a system in place, like in this community that we live in, or in any other community that you're aware of, because you've been doing this for a while, a system in place that helps family members start this process sooner rather than later? If you know, do you know what? So, mom's gone to the doctor or to the neurologist and been given the diagnosis of dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever it may be, and it's like in the early stages. Is there any kind of a process or anything that exists that says, so with that, we need to be thinking about this and this and this and this, one of which would be driving? Do you know any kind of
system
like that? It's
a great question. I can't say that I do. I know that, like with the Alzheimer's Association, they do mention driving in some of their materials.
Right.
A lot of publications through these professional organizations have shifted over time from saying, as soon as you're diagnosed, stop driving. There's been this realization within the medical community that a diagnosis of early dementia doesn't necessarily mean driving is unsafe. So there's a little more freedom or leeway in that.
Uh-huh.
But in reality, I'm not sure what guidance family members are being given around that. Personally, I would love to see driving being addressed sooner than later. And I think it's true, as with so many things in dementia, to where you want to talk about these important issues while that individual is at their best ability to do so and to have some say in that process. And even in terms of an evaluation, my ideal is to see somebody early on and have them pass with restrictions. So we have some, it's not exactly baseline data, but we have some early data. We may start those discussions about driving restrictions, have some time to see how that works, and then have them come back. 6 months to a year is kind of the neurology.
So what might be those, quote, restrictions? Because I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, that those restrictions that you're talking about are not necessarily anything that can be imposed by like DMV.
Or they can be.
Okay. So what are the restrictions when you're talking about restrictions?
Sure.
So what kind of things would that be?
So and this is for the state of Colorado DMV,
right.
So it's going to be different. But I think most states have some leeway in their ability for restrictions. So if I see somebody and I recommend restrictions and it's somebody with dementia, first of all, I want to say I'm only going to go this route if they have family, if they have some other people who are close to them who can help me know if those restrictions are being followed. Because we just already talked about the strategic level and how often that's not the case. But somebody who's got a spouse or a caregiver living with them or nearby mm-hmm. is often able to help reinforce things like not driving at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like not driving at night is one of the easier ones for people to transition from. Oftentimes just with general aging, night vision isn't as good. So that may be a place where people are less comfortable driving.
Right.
So a night driving restriction is common. An interstate driving restriction is something that I will commonly recommend.
Okay.
And I will often explain that just in terms of the speed, that that processing speed piece and that a minor mistake at those high speeds can have such a disastrous effect. So, and then there can be certain mile radius from home type mm-hmm. of restrictions. And that's here, we can write that in. And so if somebody comes to see me, I would bring this form or have them, send the form to their doctor, because ultimately it's their doctor who would agree to those restrictions or place mm-hmm. those restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doctor sends that form into the DMV, and they would actually be listed on the client's license. Like you need to wear glasses when you're driving, it would be listed in that same place.
Then with that kind of a process, would the DMV call the person in? Or would they just send the new license with the restrictions
on there?
Good
question. So here, the DMV would mail out a letter and say, please come in within 20 days to get your new license. They wouldn't have to retest. They would just have to come in and get the, so they have to physically appear though.
And again, this process we're talking about, we know functions in Colorado, but each state is different. So each state would have its own. Is there a place people can go to look for like what kinds of restrictions or things per state?
Yeah, kind of. It's a really tough area to find information on, but I did send you that link.
Right.
And,
And we'll be posting. So the link is lpp.seniordrivers.org. And then from there, you would be looking for an index kind of a thing. And we'll post that link on our website, Thriving Life.
So that one's kind of a new thing to me.
Right.
But I have looked through it a bit, and it seemed pretty accurate for Colorado. Mm-hmm. These things change, and that's where it's difficult. There is a great resource called the Clinician's Guide to Assessing and Counseling Older Drivers,
mm-hmm.
and that's a free publication available online. The first editions of that had like every state listed out and kind of what their laws were, but they stopped doing it because these changed and they were out of date, and so it's a moving target a little bit.
Right.
But that link would be a good place to start.
Okay. So I've encountered situations in my work career supporting family caregivers where, they did everything. They went to the doctor. They came, they came to you, everything, and dad just insists on driving. And the only way to really keep him from driving would be to, do something to the car, to disable the car, or sell the car, or not even sell it, but, quote, move it out of sight kind of a thing. Do you recommend that kind of stuff as last ditch measures kind of a thing?
Yeah, really I do. I think it's, all of this is so individual.
Right.
And I don't often know what happens after the evaluation. So somebody comes in, usually as a family member with them, we have this discussion as a team. And I think for some people, they're able to say, okay. Honestly, for some people that I see, they say, we go out and do the drive. And I say, how did it go? And they said, I think I'm ready to stop driving. You know, like for some people, it's eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, I'm just tired of driving. Or, you know, they're able to find some way to say, and the family's there to offer rides and things. So that's like a great a great solution, right?
That's the ideal solution.
That's the ideal is when they agree.
Yep.
Then again, there's clients who are angry. And I would say these tend to be people further along in the disease process. So sometimes that's not necessarily the clientele that gets referred to me. Mm-hmm. But recently I did see somebody in, who I would say was in this category of over my dead body kind of a discussion.
And I'm afraid if I get to mention, get to that point, I may be that client that says over my dead
body. Yes, I don't say that with any judgment.
No, I know you do, but yeah.
But absolutely.
Right.
And I do think, and in that case, we are suggesting ways to disable the battery, disable the vehicle. For that particular person, it wouldn't have taken much. Like if she actually went out to drive, which she hadn't done in a couple of months, but she clutched those keys on occasion.
Right.
She probably, if she couldn't get the car started, would have probably gotten distracted and done something else after that. Mm-hmm. But again, it's different for different people. But I think, yes, for some people, the licensing piece doesn't impact them. So even though we may recommend no driving, the doctor may send in the form to the state canceling their license. If there's still a car there and there's still keys there, there's definitely
I've had caregivers in my office who their family member fit that description. They were going to drive come hell or high water. And I do have some insight into that kind of thinking because In March, during a really bad snowstorm, got into an accident. And then end of April, my car went into the collision shop for 3 weeks of repair. And so I had to rely on, you know, my wife to get me to and from work or finding other means of transportation, everything. Just killed me. Because for me, it's all about the independence. It's all about I don't have to rely on anybody. I can get in the car and go wherever I want kind of a thing. I was picking up seeds in myself with that experience of going, I may not be, if I get dementia, one of those people that go quietly into the night, per se.
Well, I think you make a good point in terms of we all rely on our cars.
Right.
And there could be a variety of reasons why we can't drive. Dementia could be one of those. Even at a younger age, I see people because of an injury or an accident that maybe there's a delay or maybe they need to stop driving. So I think one piece of that is that experience of, okay, so what did you do? When your car was in the shop, did you still get to work? Were you still able to patch together transportation? Mm-hmm. And I think all of us thinking about that, what would I do? What did I do? Can help plan for a future time. Mm-hmm. You know, the research says that all of us will outlive our ability to drive. So if we're lucky enough and healthy enough to live long enough, on average, this is for Americans, males will outlive their ability to drive by 6 years, females by 10 years.
Wow.
So it's not just an issue with a particular family member.
Or a particular disease.
Or a particular diagnosis or anything like that. Absolutely.
See, and I was totally unaware of that. That's just amazing and in a way kind of mind-blowing. So it's not a matter of if I'm not able to drive. It becomes more a matter of when I'm not able to drive because something will come up that will hinder that ability.
And I do think that's a good way to frame the discussion of when it's no longer safe for me to drive, blah, blah, blah. This is what I will do. Mm-hmm. And I do try to talk to families or use that terminology with families as well. Even people who come in and pass the evaluation, like I was saying, maybe we make some restrictions, maybe not. Maybe there's a Parkinson's diagnosis and they're doing great at this point in time.
Right.
For most people, there will be a point in time. And so I like to try to help be on board to help make those decisions.
Yeah. So, and I'll explain this after I ask the question in a simple simplified way. So does the system frustrate you? And what I mean by that is, because my assumption is everything is siloed. So you've got doctors who are, you know, the person with the dementia or whatnot is going to the doctor. Doctors approaching everything from a medical standpoint, but may not have the strengths, skills, abilities, knowledge to begin to help the family think about, so these are all the other things from a social aspect that are going to become impacted with the dementia. It's purely about the dementia, but they don't talk about all that other aspect.
Yeah.
And I think that overlaps in another way. So that then, I would think, would create issues in terms of we could be doing a much better job with each other as a community, but we're not. Is that making sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the system, kind of whichever system we're talking about,
right.
it is true that if we're talking about healthcare specifically, we don't overlap enough in a lot of these ways. So my background is as an occupational therapist and really working within the healthcare system. And I feel like that medical background really impacts what I bring to these medical driving evaluations in terms of the clinical skills, but also in terms of realization that we're not just talking about driving. When we're talking about this driving cessation, we're talking about meaning, we're talking about ability to participate in life activities,
right.
and the goal of trying to help people get back to those activities as opposed to the goal being about driving. I do think there's a lot misunderstood about this whole driving topic, in that for a long time it was considered it's a family issue, it's a private issue. Doctors wouldn't talk about it. They didn't want to lose their patients. There were kind of a stigma about a lot of this. And I think there's still bits of that there, or quite a bit. I find through the Engage Mobility Initiative, I have grant funding to really educate medical practitioners about older driver safety. So part of what I'm doing is talking to occupational therapists, talking to physicians, even just about being aware of the laws. Mm-hmm. But my bottom line with all these discussions is bring up driving. Just talk about it. You don't have to take anyone's life. You know, you don't have to like know all the answers. But the more people in the various systems, so in the social system, yes, have the caregiver support groups talk about driving.
Right.
Yes, the medical, so that what happens right now is that it just gets missed.
Right.
People go through maybe a medical course of treatment, rehab. Nobody talks about driving. So then when someone brings it up, usually it's pretty late in the process, and everyone is surprised.
Well, and that may be for a number of reasons, but one that just came to mind is it's missed because the people who are assisting, the professionals who are assisting, I mean, driving is just taken for granted. It's something that we just do. We don't think about it. So when you're going through assessing a lot of stuff, driving sometimes could be overlooked because the professional who's helping with that, it's such a taken for granted, ingrained task that it's hard to see how this issue, memory, would have harmful negative impacts on those skills. The other two things that I think you had mentioned in terms of this interweaving. We're trained to be independent, self-sufficient. Driving fits into that beautifully. And you had mentioned about getting back to the activities. It's activities. Activities are how we value ourselves. So the person's already sensing that they're losing stuff. And this is one more thing that they're losing that gives them value.
Yeah.
Rather than looking at who they are as a human being and how do I derive my value from that, because all my life I've been valuing myself by everything that I've done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then that independence part, we move into that whole issue of, yes, we have a responsibility to society, but in this country, we don't have that in the forefront of our minds because we're so ingrained to be independent that we don't think about what we do as an individual has an impact, a ripple effect into society. Mm-hmm. So some of this may be society values as well.
Oh, hugely. Absolutely. And I think what ends up happening in that situation where the conversation is about you might hurt somebody, you know, someone mm-hmm. on the family's trying to bring it around to that sense, mm-hmm. we also come to this liability sense. Like that's a language that our culture does speak
right.
of, well, Dad, if something happened, you could be sued. There's mm-hmm. so that's what I see. Maybe even more so in the medical setting mm-hmm. is that's the approach that some doctors will take is what if worst case scenario happens, mm-hmm. which can be effective. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think that piece of realizing we have kind of this thing of driving is a privilege. Right. We think of it as a right, but driving is a privilege, not a right. And I think for caregivers and therapists and people working with this person, I would hope the goal to be on maintaining participation. Mm-hmm. So minimizing the fact that they're not driving to get to church, mm-hmm. but emphasizing the fact that they're still being in community.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Activities that they always enjoyed doing. There's a gentleman that I worked with who had a group of men. They went out to breakfast 5 days a week, and he wanted to drive there.
Mm-hmm.
And the first couple times I saw him over probably a four-year period, we decided, at one point, we decided that was the only place that he would drive independently, from his home to breakfast with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
His wife did all the other driving. He mm-hmm. was okay with that. The last time I saw him, it was time for him to stop driving.
Mm-hmm.
And really that emphasis on, you just get a ride there. At that point, they had other options. Someone could pick you up. And so to really focus on getting together with your friends
mm-hmm.
is the important part here.
Right. Right.
And how you get there, maybe we can let some pieces of that
go.
Right.
So what should family members be looking for? What are some signs that driving may becoming impaired? I mean, I'm sure there's obvious ones, like driving through stop signs, but some of the less obvious ones.
Couple things on that. One piece is just that, to me, I really see driving in this context of activities of daily living, the skills that we all do every day.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I'll talk to families about, so let's say they come in and the individual passes the evaluation. General recommendation, if there's a neurocognitive diagnosis, mm-hmm. Something that's progressive, to come back in a year for mm-hmm. another evaluation. But often I will say if there's changes in function, that's going to impact driving, or those similar things are the basis of the driving skills
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unrealistic for me to have somebody who can't live by themselves still be driving, depending on why they're not living by themselves. But let's say they're not safe to be home alone.
Right.
Let's say regardless of age or diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that brings up concerns about driving.
Mm-hmm.
So one piece is just that overall functioning. But there are a lot of great resources mm-hmm. out there as mm-hmm. well that can help with these discussions. And I'll mention a couple of those. They're put together through the Hartford in conjunction with the MIT Age Lab. Mm-hmm. And you have the links mm-hmm. to these on your site.
Okay.
One is called We Need to Talk, Family Conversations with Older Drivers. So this one is just really very client-centered discussions about how do I bring up this topic mm-hmm. with an older adult.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is At the Crossroads, and this one is specific for Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and driving.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these are workbooks, and they're available free of charge, but they have this list in there called Warning Signs for Older Drivers. So kind of getting back to your initial question in a more concrete way, there is this list of 28 items, things like difficulty turning when backing up, other drivers honking the horn, hitting curbs, scrapes or dents on the car. So there's this whole list of things. And honestly, if you look through this list, you'll be like, oh, well, I've done that before. There's always that piece of like.
So when you said somebody honking when you're backing up, I'm going, yeah, that's happened to me. So, yeah.
So often I have adult children come in and be a part of the evaluation. Then they're like, I hope I don't have to do this test. So there's that. But the point of having this list is to give the family member more of an objective measure. So it's one thing for me to say, okay, if they're not remembering to take their medications, but more objectively, two pieces to this. One piece is to be a passenger with the person you're concerned about.
Okay.
And so often that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I know even in my family, if I'm going somewhere with my mother-in-law, I will pick her up and drive her.
Right.
So for a lot of times, people have to make a conscious effort to be, okay, every 3 months, I'm going to let dad drive to the store or whatever that situation
is. Control issues,
maybe? Or fear, or, you know, there's a lot of things
there. Got it, yeah.
Potentially. But that should tell you something, too. Mm-hmm. So this list gives you something to, you know, don't necessarily check it off while they're driving the car, but come back, look at these. Oh, you know, actually, they didn't do any of these things. I'm just...
I'm
concerned, right. but they did okay.
Right.
And then 3 months later, oh... Now, this time there was a near miss, and this time there was bad judgment on a left turn. And so just some warning signs to help families and caregivers make some of these decisions. Okay. There's also, and I don't think I sent you the link for this, but I can. There's a really good online survey. I don't know if survey is the right word, but it's to be completed by a family member. So it's a proxy survey. And again, it would have to be completed after this person has been a passenger in the car. It's really the only fair way you can judge any of that.
Right.
But you would go on and it asks for how comfortable would you feel with this person driving in certain situations. You know, it's pretty in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
It's through the University of Florida. It's called the Fitness to Drive Screening Measure.
Okay.
And a lot of good research behind it. It comes up with basically a red, yellow, or green.
Oh,
so kind of give you like, you know what?
I like
seems
that
good.
Visual.
It's helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And then, well, there are some concerns or red. And honestly, within occupational therapy, we've been using this OT drive model that also uses a red, yellow, green model because it makes so much sense.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's this idea, too, that not everybody needs to come see somebody like me.
Right.
So not everybody needs a driving evaluation. I would say the diagnosis of dementia would automatically put someone in the yellow. So let's just go there.
Mm-hmm.
But then for that, there are some people that just, you know, these are the ones that I am concerned when they come to my office and get lost on their way back from the bathroom. You know, they're just, or just aren't able to independently dress or feed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's some value that something that I do can offer to the family. But oftentimes that level isn't what's necessary. So kind of that yellow category are the ones where I would really recommend a driving eval with someone with a medical background. I do think that's an important piece.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to mention, the Association for Driver Rehabilitation Specialists, because that's a nationwide organization.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you the link for that as well.
Uh-huh.
They have a searchable database. So whatever state you're in, if you're looking for somebody to do a driving evaluation for your loved one,
you can go
into that database
Perfect.
And search.
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay. Is it wise to have a GPS locator on the car?
That's a really interesting question. One we can only talk about in the past several years, right? A nice modern technology.
Right.
I do really see a place for that.
Okay.
You know, we talked about memory and how somebody may be pretty intact in terms of their basic driving skills, maybe their tactical skills. And that's the person who, you know, my question to families often is, where does this individual drive by themselves?
Mm-hmm.
And so using the example I used before, to tennis and breakfast, let's say. Like he has a couple of places that he doesn't have any passengers. He's the only one. I will always talk to families about the research around dementia and driving. There are a lot of risk factors like we talked about, but the biggest thing is people getting lost. And I think when I talk about getting lost, people think of, oh, yeah, I got turned around last week too. Right. Like they think of minor or fixable losses.
Right.
But what has happened more often than we realize is somebody ends up in another state,
right,
run out of gas,
right,
perhaps not even on the road anymore, mm-hmm, perhaps really in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a significant concern, I think, regardless of what level of dementia.
Right.
And so if someone is going to continue driving, I do recommend that, like, for example, talk to your dad's tennis buddies. If he's expected and he doesn't show up, call me right away. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have a GPS locator or whatever, have some plans in place for expected trips and ways to check up on that.
Mm-hmm.
I did work with a family. This woman had a frontotemporal dementia,
mm-hmm,
and she was very active. And she ran and hiked her dogs and did all these things, mm-hmm, lived independently, had a lot of issues with language. And her daughter was concerned about her. And her daughter did have a GPS locator on the car with a geofence. So she knew where her mom generally drove,
right,
for her daily routines.
Right.
And if she drove outside of that area, it would alert on her phone.
Oh, wow.
So pretty cool. And it was actually something that was designed for teenagers, like the technology itself. You know, it was so you know if your teenager's going outside their zone.
Exactly.
Her mom was well aware that her daughter had it. You know, it wasn't a hidden thing, although
right,
I've heard sometimes it needs to be.
Right.
To me, that made a lot of sense,
yeah,
and gave them both peace of mind.
Uh-huh.
So I think there can be a lot of benefit in technology.
Right.
It's just sometimes tricky to figure it out, make it work. Like sometimes there's some help needed in there.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like one of the key things is, especially early in the process, is to start talking about stuff. Don't just assume or let it ride. Have those, for me, the difficult conversation, because of my work with hospice and everything, the difficult conversation always means, so what do you want in terms of advanced directives and stuff like that? But difficult conversations can be something as simple as this whole issue about driving,
mm-hmm,
and we need to have that discussion now and maybe get some things down in writing. You had sent a piece called the Driver Planning Agreement. It looks like it was from AAA, and then it was the AOTA?
AOTA, American Occupational Therapy Association.
Okay, so they've worked together to put kind of like a driver planning agreement, which then could be, based on what I'm looking at, that could be the piece to start the conversation.
Yes, this is a really good one. There's a variety of them out there.
Uh-huh.
I like this one for a couple of reasons. One is that it's not just the older adult saying, this is who I want to tell me not to drive anymore. Like,
right,
like some of them are just written of that, of when it's not time to drive, then they designate who they want to tell them.
Right.
This one puts kind of a responsibility on both parties. So the first part, and it has them listed out, the important thing my family can do is help me explore all of my options.
Mm-hmm.
So one, help me find an occupational therapist who's trained in driving,
mm-hmm,
to make sure I'm safe or to help me decide. But then go down, help me make sure my medications are intact, because there's medication interactions that can affect driving. And so
right,
sometimes a change to medication can let somebody keep driving.
Right.
Eye doctor. So there's a list of things for the family kind of responsibility piece. And then there's a list kind of for that individual of, I'm willing to explore other means of transportation. I'm willing to talk to you about what's important, what
mm-hmm
destinations, what activities are important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last line, though, is, should it become necessary to discuss if it's safe or reasonable for me to continue driving, I designate blank to address this issue with me. So it does
mm-hmm
have that piece in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can be a really good, like you're saying, used
mm-hmm
early on in the process
mm-hmm
to know that there's give and take here, and we have your best interests in
right
mind. And
right,
I think we know that, but that's not always what comes across in these discussions.
And when I was reading this, And then there was what I really latched on for, like, the driver, discuss the places I enjoy going and the destinations I need to reach to ensure I maintain a high quality of life. I love that. Because that's focusing on what can I continue to be involved with that adds to my quality of life. And so that becomes the place or the destination of last resort, meaning I'm more comfortable letting go of this and this and this, but it's extremely important that we find a way to get me transported, however that may be, to this activity or to that activity, because they're so extremely important to me and how I feel about myself and my quality of life. And I've never thought about asking that or focusing on that.
No, I agree with you. I think it's such an interesting piece. And I think what tends to happen is that we, as caregivers and just as humans, tend to get very practical. Okay, let's make a list of places mom needs to go and then find ways to get there. Sometimes what's missing and what people actually miss the most is that spontaneity.
Yes.
Is that piece of, I mean, sometimes people express it of like, well, what if I just want a hamburger in the middle of the day?
Right.
But I think it's more of like not having everything scheduled out so much.
Right.
So if you have some ideas of maybe someone's not going to write going out for ice cream on their list of chores for the week, but you know that's something that your family member has always loved, that piece in there can kind of help trigger, oh, yeah. Just stop by once in a while. Just stop by and see, do you need to go anywhere, you know? Or have somebody else do that. It doesn't all have to fall on one family member, for sure. But yeah, I think that's a really nice part.
So I was listening to a webcast a while ago, and it was people who had dementia in the early stages, and they were on this webcast, they were talking about driving issues. And one of the ladies came up with a very simple idea, and I kind of want to get your input on it. But she was, so the dementia-friendly movement is working with communities, and Colorado Springs is one of those places that's in the process of doing this, to raise people's awareness of the uniqueness about people with dementia. And this gal on the webcast said her community was working on being dementia friendly, and they had restaurants that had purple tables, which meant that if a family came in and they had mom or dad with them, mom or dad had dementia, you know, they could sit at that purple table because the wait staff that were at that table had special training or information about how to present, how to cope with a person who has cognitive issues. So then she said, with that in mind, she said, so why couldn't we have, like with Uber and Lyft, why couldn't we have purple Uber and purple Lyft? You know, where a family member, whatnot, could, and that is, some of this may already be existing. I don't know, because I don't use Uber or Lyft. But I just thought that was a fascinating insight in terms of maybe some more, adding some more flexibility or for some more spontaneity to figure all of those problems out, from a liability issue, from a society issue, everything. So that there was a balance of not having to rely on family members or friends all the time to provide the transportation, especially if you still had the ability to and awareness to, like, maybe call Uber or Lyft, but you know, somehow you were in the system.
No, I think it's really fascinating. I think the topic of alternative transportation, other ways of getting around, is one that needs a lot more discussion. And honestly needs more solutions is part of why there's not a big discussion around it. So a lot of what I've talked about today has been family members giving rides because that's typically what I see. I do agree. I mean, the idea of a purple Uber or purple Lyft is really a really interesting thought. There is a service that I'm aware of called GoGo Grandparent, and that is somewhat of a concierge service for Uber and Lyft, not dementia-friendly specifically. That I'm aware of, but that an adult child could set up the account so that the older adult doesn't have to have a cell phone, doesn't have to have the kind of technical knowledge, could call from their landline to get a ride. And so that's one, not exactly what you're saying, but one option on there. I think that it's tricky, and this is where it really does belong as part of these healthcare discussions, is that sometimes the reason somebody's no longer safe to drive also makes it unsafe for them to participate in other forms of transportation.
Correct.
So, for like a public bus, for example.
Right.
And so having some input around what modes of transportation would be appropriate, I think, is an important mm-hmm. piece. And as you're talking about, what if we started this discussion earlier?
Right.
I think this fits in so well to that, because mm-hmm. to ask somebody who's in a moderate to severe stage of dementia to add a new routine of taking
that's
shuttle
not,
or things like that, it's
right.
not going to work.
Right.
And I think for somebody without dementia, the same is true for
mm-hmm.
a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
We have to build our routines over time and mm-hmm. our comfort level with those.
Mm-hmm.
And so in general, we want to encourage using alternative transportation before it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so same with Uber and Lyft. And I've had some family say, well, I think I'm just going to take Uber when I'm at my dad's this weekend and we'll take it together. Just
right.
just so they have an idea of what it's
yep.
like.
Yep.
So, yeah, I wish we had better solutions on that piece of it, though.
Right. And well, and I think those will come primarily because with the boomers hitting the aging services, and what I've always said with other services other than driving, the boomers, because of the size of the generation, has busted a lot of stuff, broken a lot of stuff up because it just can't sustain the mass from the boomers. But because of that mass, the boomers as a generation created a lot of stuff that wouldn't be around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the toy industry, Mattel, was non-existent before the boomer generation. So we create a lot of stuff because we have the mass to be able to do that. And I'm thinking alternatives to transportation, alternatives mm-hmm. to other social issues fit into that.
Yes.
It's going to be a difficult process because sometimes we're going to have to bust up what's currently there because it's not working. But out of that will come new stuff that's more appropriate, more technologically appropriate, all of
mm-hmm.
that. So,
absolutely. I think that's a great point. And I kind of feel like we can't have this discussion without at least mentioning automated vehicles, because
because I used to live in Chandler, Arizona, and I know Google is working on, I think it was Google, Chandler is the focal point for a lot of research in terms of the development of automated cars. So that thought crossed my mind.
It's an
as well.
Interesting one.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know. There's people a woman I just spoke to yesterday who said, it's not in my makeup to get into a car with a stranger and have him drive me somewhere. So like she was just,
right.
had such trouble with the idea of using Lyft or Uber, and maybe that could
or
change over
taxis.
Time. Or taxis,
right.
yes. So I don't know if that would be better or worse if there was no driver.
Who knows?
So there's a long way to go with that. I think
right.
with all of these, there's lots of potential solutions. A big piece is the culture around it and the acceptance. So whether that's of automated vehicles or that's a culture of, you know, it really works great to carpool to church, like whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of it will require a shift within mm-hmm. ourselves and kind of within our
right.
generational groups.
Right. Okay. So we're kind of coming to the end for today. So a final question, which is a common question we ask at the end of all of our podcasts. Even the hardest things in life bring us gifts. So tell me about a gift you received through your work in this profession.
I think that's a lovely question. I think just really so much of what I do, the way I see it, is connect with people. Like that's really my goal when somebody walks into my, when they just call on the phone, is to make a connection and see that person for all that they have to offer. Even though I'm testing and, you know, picking apart things that maybe aren't going as well as they used to, I think through that work and through coming out on the other side of the evaluation and still seeing this beautiful person there. So I think just the connections that I make with people really are what keep me going every day.
Good. Well, thank you. Any other parting words of wisdom that you'd like to?
Oh, man. No, just really what we've talked about in terms of start planning early. Mm-hmm. That's kind of talk about it and start planning early.
Okay.
Thank you.
You've given us a lot of valuable information and insight today. If people want to find you, how can they find you?
Oh, sure. So my website is probably a good place to start, and I'm actually going to give you two. Okay. One is the one through the grant, so it's engagingmobility.org.
Okay.
And that one is really geared for medical professionals, for families, just for resources around driving.
Okay.
And that will continue to expand here. And then for my practice, healthpromotionpartners.com is really my website for the driving evaluations that I do, consulting and other things along those lines.
Okay. Terry, it has been wonderful spending the last
hour
or so with you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it so much, Kent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.